taken care of. And you need some of these, you know, interventions, health infrastructure, equity in the distribution of personnel to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Else you live in communities and then you get referred to the higher place. That higher place is not in your district. Some may not even have the transportation to go. So in as much as we are all focusing on preventive aspect, there's an aspect which is about treatment or management of the cases, which as we speak in Ghana is better done at the district, regional, and tertiary facilities. Yeah. So you need these things in addition to the preventive measures that we are all talking about.
All right.
Thank you.
If you just joined us, this is the first Joy National Dialogue on non-communicable diseases. We've already been live on the Joy News Channel and Joy 99.7 FM, as well as all our social media platforms for an hour. But we've just been joined now by our Joy Prime audience. Good evening to you all. This is a very important conversation held under the auspices of Farm Access, represented here tonight by Dr. Kwesi Boahene, who is the Director of Health Systems there. We also have Dr. Jacqueline Thompson, family physician at the Greater Accra Regional Hospital. We have Professor Gordon Abeka-Nkrumah, who is with the Department of Health Services Management at the University of Ghana Business School. Dr. Eric Nsia-Boateng is the head of monitoring and evaluation at the Ministry of Health. He represents government in this conversation. Labram Musa is the national coordinator of the Ghana NCD Alliance, with lots and lots of advocacy and real life experience being brought to bear in our conversation. Now, Prof, it is obviously cheaper to live an unhealthy lifestyle. In Ghana, a tomato costs 5 Ghana cedis. I mean, are there some Ghanaians who unfortunately are priced out of the option of healthy living?
Thank you once again. Maybe what I would do is that I would rather would not want to start answering you from there, but look at the whole financing issue holistically. And the way I see it is to analyze it from the centers of responsibility, which starts from the level of the state to corporate Ghana and then to communities and individuals. Now, the level of the state, there are two things that I see, okay? The state should be pressured to do policy shifts, and this policy shift could be issues of regulation, and then it could be issues of taxation to raise money. And I think that what we should be doing is strong advocacy, what I call a business case, which is woven around elite incentives. So, for instance, we have argued that NCDs are the next pandemic. Okay. How are we communicating NCDs to the elite who have the power to make decisions when it comes to resource allocation, say the Ministry of Finance, say Cabinet? How have we communicated NCDs to them? Do they see NCDs as the next COVID, which is coming up, which may necessitate the president having fellow Ghanaians every fortnight and having meetings all over the place? So the way we package this message and carve it around their own incentives in terms of how this determines their electoral fortunes would be very, very important, because these are the very things that sort of tickles them to reallocate, to create the necessary policy shift. For instance, if it is about regulation to be able to push down the junk industry, and if it is regulation to raise new taxes. Think about it. COVID, we came up with 1%, was it 1%?
Levy.
Yeah.
And we still pay,
and we all paid without, because everybody saw what COVID was doing. And so we need to think about it this way. Then the other side is resource allocation. Again, I think that the civil society space, together with the Ministry of Health, should begin to develop the capacity to make a business case in a way, again, that is aligned to the incentives of the elite, both at the state, sub-national, and even at the district level. We need to begin to look at this so that there can be shifts in resource allocation. Now, when it comes to corporate Ghana, Corporate Ghana has a role to play in these conversations. But I think that there is the need for policy levers that create incentives for Corporate Ghana to begin to also support the process. Because remember, they are not Father Christmas. And so policy can be redirected to create the enabling environment and the incentives for Corporate Ghana to get into this. And again, regulation in that side. And then I'll come to the side that you are most interested in, the average Ghanaian and a tomato costing 5 Ghana cedis and how many people will be able to buy. So I look at this from two directions, okay? I think that first is about issues of responsibility, okay? We need to have a big conversation about responsibility and where this is taking us. I mean, I don't think that before COVID, any of us was interested in washing our hands and having a mask on. But when we knew COVID was going to kill us, majority of us decided to put on the mask. Of course, I don't expect everybody to put on the mask because in every society, you're going to get a few deviant ones anyway. So how have we elevated this conversation? And if we begin to go that direction and begin to let people understand the personal responsibility that they have and the payoff for that personal responsibility, my thinking is that behavior will change. But again, I also think about support systems. So let's talk about planting for food and jobs. It was a big policy. We all talked about it. But I think that that is a lost opportunity. Planting for food and jobs could have been aligned with an NCD strategy such that households are being supported with subsidized organic fertilizer, seedlings, and being given the education and training. That education does not mean you should come to my house. Think about, you know, they were doing math and science something on TV. There can be state sponsoring that, teaching people how to do home gardening. Kojo, if you come to my home in University of Ghana, there's, you know, the dispenser bottles. Mm-hmm. I just cut them and just get soil into it. And when you come, I'm planting almost everything. I have people can do, even those people who are using the tiles, they can still plant basic vegetables. Okra can grow very well in that. Cocoyam can grow very well in that. Garden eggs will grow in that. And so it's not an issue of saying it is just 5 cedis and so I cannot buy. But people can be encouraged and supported at home to do this. And what's going to happen is that it can even generate income for people. And as it generates income, it also gives them some at home to eat. And so for me, I do not want to, I'm not the sort of person that looks at constraints. And so I'm a bit biased because in my world, I don't see impossibilities. I always see that there is a possibility, but there's got to be personal responsibility and then support to be able to deliver that.
Just out of curiosity, what on record is the mortality rate for diabetes alone? Out of all those who have it, what percentage end up dying?
I mean, that is a challenge that we face. I mean, if you look at the routine database, in our last health summit, which was organized in May, we tried to estimate that from the routine database. And I can tell you it was just less than 1%. Mm. But if you go into the WHO website, it's a little... It's between 20 to 30% for those aged between 15 to 49 adults. Yeah. These are estimates that we have it in the state. And it's one of the issues that we also want to address. How do we make sure that we have a system that collects the information for us to routinely analyze and make informed decisions of those things?
I want to work with that estimate because of the question I want to ask.
Let me say this. I am likely to believe the WHO estimate because the study, and you know that diabetes and hypertension, they go together.
Yes.
Okay, and the study in Ghana estimated around, in terms of those who have hypertension is between a lower end of 26 to about 34%.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So if we're looking at some 2.4 million, according to WHO, people with diabetes. I'm focusing on diabetes for just a moment because of the question I want to ask. About 2.4 million people, according to WHO. And if we're saying about 1% of them will die or are dying, that's what? That's 24,000? 24,000 people. Okay. Now, 6,700 people die from smoking. Smoking. 24,000 die from diabetes. Why in God's name have we not put a warning on every product that contains sugar?
It's something that is being done, and I'm sure we are all aware what FDA is doing. Recently, there was a court case that when they tried to prevent the celebrities from advertising for some of this alcohol. Exactly. So these are measures that we are using the regulatory framework to also try and curb the increasing rate of NCDs. Yes, so we will get there in terms of having Pretoria views on some of these things. So I am happy we've started.
What are the sort of the hurdles? What are the obstacles to doing it now?
Because you agree with me that some of these things, you need to involve the stakeholders in that space. For the manufacturers, those who produce this, you need to bring them to the discussion table to let them understand. But they are looking at the profit side of it.
We didn't have to do that with tobacco.
Exactly. I mean, so they are looking at that side. We would then be looking at the life of the population. That is what we are interested in. How do we protect them for economic gain? So these things will require discussion when it comes to the legislative issues that you talk about. So it's a discussion that we will continue to have. We have begun with a ban on some of these things, and we continue to engage them and push forward that, going forward, if there's a need for us to have those scary pictures on some of these things, why not? If you believe that is what will address some of these issues, to drum home for people to understand that if I indulge in some of these things, I'm going to get this. Of course, like the COVID thing that Prof mentioned, when we all saw that the fatality rate was really, really, quick, no one will tell you you need to put on a mask to avoid getting it or contracting it. So apart from educating people, I believe that some of these regulatory frameworks can also help us to address the incidence of NCDs that we have in the population.
What's your assessment, Dr. Thompson, in terms of regulation? Are we a bit timid with regulation? Are we a bit slow to make the bold moves that will save lots of lives in one go? Or in your experience, because I ask you this because of your direct interaction with those who suffer and die from these conditions. Your experience, is it about time we got radical with our legislation around it?
Yes, I think it's about time. The time is now. I think we've waited for quite a long time to, start this or put policies in place. I mean, the policies are there. But then how to implement them? If you go online, you'll find out there's a policy on NCD. We had one from previously, and then the most recent one was done in 2022. In there, you'll find that we have to bring about diet, we have to control things, we have to do physical activity, we have to do this. Oh, the whole plan is there. But then why are we not implementing it? And it's got to do with the policy makers are there, but then we have to make sure that it is implemented and carried out. So if the policy is implemented and you find people are defaulting, then what are the consequences? Okay, so it is right about now that we have to put those things and stamp our feet down and say that we need to do it. And for us as healthcare workers, we need to come up with patient stories. We need to come up with figures, we need to have evidence, we need to have the data and put it across and say that this number of people who indulge in this activity or this behavior either benefited from it or they got a risk factor, or they died from this, or whatever it is that they gained or suffered from it. So it's right about time that we need to put these measures in place and make sure that it is done. Because in certain countries, excuse me, like in Singapore, I watched a documentary recently that talked about the fact that their human resource is the most important thing that they have. They don't have anything else. So they made sure that they will make physical activity spaces available. So you find 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds who are exercising because those are made available in their communities. And then what are we doing here? We have to get radical, like you said. So we have to move on from advocacy, and we have to get active. We should employ the activism and then get it going. And we all have a role to play. But I believe that as a healthcare worker, if I'm not giving the information that this is what I found, even if there's data and we are sitting on it, or the data is being generated and it's not being put to use, then there's no point in even generating the data.
Labram, sorry, you had an intervention.
You've asked several important questions, and I guess, you know, when I came in and I saw we have 3 hours, you thought it was too long, but the question
it is
that,
short.
It's too short. Yeah. I now get the impression that it's too short. You know? Because you're asking critical questions which may require a lot of time to unpack. So, the first, one of the points was more about the financing of it. And I think Dr.
Prof
made a point about building a business case for it. And investment case is critical, because also Dr. Thompson said, we are not talking only about individual health. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about human resource for health. We're talking about the social fabric that many people are moving to the cities. So really having time to articulate such an investment case is critical. Based on the nature of my work, I analyze challenges in the context of looking for solutions. Yeah, and I think, you know, I was at a conference in Koforidua, and this was a conference of the Christian Health Association of Ghana, CHAG, and the CEO of NHIA was there. And so I was talking about leadership, and he said that one of the things I heard him say is that when you have your birthday, NHIA will provide free of charge checkup.
Yes.
I think it's important that he said that. And it's also important that, you know, people take advantage of it. One of the important developments that have also happened, so before COVID, Ghana and Norway, they had a policy on NCDs. And this was signed for the first time across the world. This was signed by the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Health.
Yeah.
Because, you know, health will hammer on that we need to do something, but the money should come from somewhere. And so the fact that the two entities came together to sign that, it was a recognition that, you know, outcomes should be financed. Fortunately, we have NHIA, you know, and also in my view, the fact that the government is paying 70% of the cost through tax. And so we have all these building blocks. The point is, how do we engage to get the maximum out of it? Technology is critical, right? Because, you know, as I said in the introduction, you've seen how it's transformed finance. So coming to health, and I'm of the opinion that due to economic challenges, every country has limited resources for health. That's the reality. So we can say that there should be more money to health. It's not only here. It's in the Netherlands, it's in Rwanda, it's everywhere. So given the limited resources, how do we then use technology? And I'm also a firm believer that you can actually provide more and better care with limited resources. Because when you put technology in, you should be able to target people who really need NCD care and effectively. If you're doing campaign, technology can help you to target your efforts. In addition to the fact that when you use technology, you get data. Data into, you know, we are all happy is not a word, but it's important that we know that 43% of, you know, mortalities are from NCD. It's the data. Data gives you the epidemiology. Data gives you how people utilize care. So if you are doing campaign and nobody is using it, through technology you will know. And that can also help you to target your intervention. And above all, when you have data, it can also help you allocate resources. And so I think we have to look at the efforts that has been made and how we add, you know, build on those efforts, optimize the capacities that we have. And of course, you know, it's also been emphasized all the time that this is a long-term effort. And I think starting with this conversation, is the way to go. But let's also recognize that if you are engaging, you know, engage people on the basis of what have they done right and how can they improve upon it. Talking about your brother and Fufu and others, you know, so this morning he didn't eat. Well done. How can you extend it? Yeah, so not totally coming with something out of his or perspective. It won't work.
Okay. We spent quite a lot of time talking about diet, which is such a big pillar in the management of non-communicable diseases. We'll also come now and talk a bit about exercise. Then we'll talk about medication, which is about dealing with those who have it, the very important point that you made, Dr. Nsiem Boateng. And then, of course, all through this, it is quite obvious that there is a massive lack of data. We've done some good work, but we need to also try and figure out how to improve on our data going forward for decision making. So I want to start off the conversation about exercise with you, Labram. And an important point was made earlier in Dr. Boahene's introduction. He talked about how the increase of urbanization has resulted in a certain sedentary lifestyle, which is not very helpful in the management of NCDs. I'm curious about that. First of all, perhaps still about half of Ghana is rural. In spite of all the urbanization, about half is rural. We also admit that about 50% of those with NCDs don't even know about it, which means they are likely to be the ones who don't have access to healthcare, which means they are likely to be rural. But are rural Ghanaians really that lazy? These guys are going to the farm every day, they are carrying, you know, firewood on their heads. And can we really say that we have a sedentary lifestyle problem in rural Ghana?
Right, so thank you very much. For sedentary lifestyle, I think that it might not be very pronounced, I mean, in the rural areas. I mean, the rural folk definitely will have, but it's not be as much as, I mean, the southern part of the country. But I love the conversation around the whether, we are bold enough. And I think that I want to just touch a bit on it. And also, sure, the financing. You know, I think that we call it, we are not bold enough, you know, to take some bold decisions. You know, in Rwanda, for instance, you would find out there they have an initiative where they could say, park your car, you know, so every Saturday, from morning to five, you know, just park a car. You don't use your car, you have to walk. You know, so they encourage physical activity and you have the whole nation, you know, in support. I mean, like that kind of mass movement, you know, that for me, I call that leadership. And also, this kind of leadership that in the Director General for the WHO, Tedros, you know, he's also championed this walk the talk, you know, so at many events, you know, once he's there, you know, he dedicates at least a day or two for physical activity, you know, and you have everybody, you know, massing up, to do that, you know. So the point for us is we need that kind of, you know, and I also appreciate one of one of your guys who work here. You know, you see him mostly at the, from my Imensa towards PDRC.
Alexis,
you know, sometimes I follow him. And I think that we need to encourage more people to do that. But of course,
when they climb the hill and they get there, they eat kinky.
I mean, that is the most unfortunate. That's the most unfortunate part, because we didn't have now people selling alcohol, you know, and all manner of things, you know, on the street. So the point for us is, at least, we are doing very well. We didn't educate people that don't go and exercise and then you go and eat, you know, a bowl of kinky and all the things that you are trying to, you know, kind of bend, you know. But again, about the issue of the boldness. And whether we are, our policymakers are actually looking at, I mean, what we need to do to ensure that we are bringing everything on board. So, for instance, we are having new roads being built, right? You know, and, you know, we call them smart cities, right? And trust me, most of these roads are lacking the very things that, you know, modern roads are supposed to have. You know, so sometimes I expect the media to be asking all these questions. You know, so the new roads are building, can we see the architecture? How are we building the things that people need to have, to people should know, to kind of, you know, exercise, and then, I mean, whether you're having, you know, I mean, pedestrian walkway, you know, I mean, the motorcycle way, you know, these are things that we need to, you know, to bring. But of course, so once we are building the roads, they might come. At the rural setting, for me, I think that, as you mentioned, I mean, they do a lot of the exercises. The challenge for us is, you know, they are also challenged with these kind of fast food joints, you know, and these are homegrown foods. You know, we don't find these Indomies and stuff being sold in the mornings. We find them in the evenings, you know. When you are going home, people buy them and then they go buy sleep. And these are happening, you know, I mean, in our communities. And that's where we also try to call our law enforcement agencies, the FDAs, I mean, to up their games, because by 5, everybody closes and go home. So who check, you know, those who operate at night? And that's where the burden increases. Because people, I mean, eat one all manner of, come and set up and sell all manner of food in the evenings, and nobody check, you know, sure call what they are selling, is a healthy one or not healthy one. So I think that the conversation need to be brought in. We need to finance the law enforcement agency so we can have those working at night, and those who are working, you know, kind of, I mean, during the daytime, so that we don't have, you know, this kind of attitude where people think that, and they also, you know, kind of run away from paying taxes, because when you pay at night, nobody come and, I mean, worry you with tax. So we need to, you know, broaden this conversation, bring all other actors on board, and then holistically look at how do we ensure that we are able to target the real problem, because the real problems, you know, are there. But sometimes, because, you know, during the day you have some people and you target them alone, and leaving those who, I mean, are the main corporate that you need to target. I want to touch also on the financing bill that I mentioned earlier. You know, you know what happened in Parliament, for instance, when we're advocating for taxes on excise taxes, for instance, on healthy commodities. I mean, the hell that, you know, we went through. I mean, just to, you know, have, you know, policymakers, Parliament pass, you know, an excise taxes on healthy commodities. Commodities are injurious for our health. The prices are very cheap in the market, you know, as compared to other countries. In fact, they know that the products are very injurious, so they put taxes on them. You buy a cigarette at a cost of $20. Can you imagine how much, I mean, that is in Ghana cities, you know? But here you go to the market and very, very cheap in the market. So the point for us, this is what we call about financing or non-communicable diseases. And I just ended a World Health Assembly, I mean, in Geneva, for instance, most of the discussion were on how to finance non-communicable diseases. And many of the case studies has been that, you know, we are not tapping on the right, you know, right resources. Because the point is that the donor is becoming fatigued. So we need to look internally, where do you get the money from? The very product that's giving us challenges. The suggestion, recommendation has been that let's tax them so that we use the money, not necessarily to get, I mean, you know, funding, but we call them byproducts of taxing this product. It has so many things, you know. Upon the fact that prices become very, very expensive, kids are unable to access them, even the poor and vulnerable are unable. The rich man, it's okay, let him be able to buy it. I mean, when he falls, he'll be able to take it himself, you know. I mean, we said it, but the poor and the vulnerable, let's keep the prices a bit, I mean, higher. You know, the sugar sweetened beverages are just very cheap in the market, so they're able to assess them. Mm-hmm. So, but when they're expensive and a poor man is going to buy them, he would think, you know, twice before he, you know. Mm-hmm. So we are urging our Minister of Finance in the media budget, if possible, they should review the excise taxes on head commodity and then up it a bit more, so we can get some resources and then channel them to the health sector. A country like Chile, Mexico, the Thailand, they have a case study that we can use where they are using these resources to finance the national health insurance.
Yeah.
And we can do it.
Mm. I'm sorry, we have to take a break. I do often tell the story of how I became diabetic for about 4 years until my diagnosis. I hadn't drank a single drop of water because I was living in a community where juice was cheaper, Fanta was cheaper. So, yes, I take your very important point. Listen, if you've been watching us on Joy News or Joy Prime, or listening to us on Joy 99.7 FM, or perhaps on our social media, we want you to keep your thoughts coming through. We're going to take a break, but I have a question for you, okay? Answer me honestly. This morning, you probably took a car to work and a car back home. You've probably already had your dinner since it's almost 8 p.m. Tell back, this is the Joy National Dialogue on Non-Communicable Diseases, the Silent Epidemic. This dialogue is held under the auspices of Farm Access and NORAD. Our guests, Dr. Jacqueline Thompson, family physician for the Greater Accra Regional Hospital. Dr. Kwesi Buahene is the Director of Health Services at Farm Access. He, of course, was with us earlier. Professor Gordon Abekankrumah is with the Department of Health Services Management at the University of Ghana Business School. Dr. Eric Nsiam Boateng is Head of Monitoring and Evaluation at the Ministry of Health. And Labram Musa is National Coordinator of the Ghana NCD Alliance. We have covered quite a lot of ground. We are live on the Joy News channel and on Joy Prime, as well as Joy 99.7 FM. We thank you for staying with us thus far. We're also live on social media, so you can follow us on our live broadcast on Facebook as well as X and YouTube. Now, on X, we want you to be a part of the conversation, so use the hashtag Joy National Dialogue as you make your contributions. We will share a bunch of them later on the show. We'll also take your phone calls if time permits. In fact, we intend to take your phone calls, so get ready with your questions and contributions. We will do that as the show progresses. Now, we've done a lot. We've talked about diet, which is one of the big pillars in the management of non-communicable diseases. We started a conversation on lifestyle and exercise just before the break. And Prof, I'm interested in this because, I asked earlier, Labram, about the issue of, rural versus urban and whether indeed we can honestly say that the rural Ghanaian is living a sedentary lifestyle. I wonder what your research and learnings tell you about that.
All right, thanks very much. So I'm not too sure that the issue of sedentary lifestyle is a big issue in the rural area, because I think that it's about going to, if you've lived in the rural area like I did when I was young, getting up, going to farm. It's a lot of activity, walking over long distances. But I think that the issue of rural area is more about their diets and then the issue of toxins. So, yes. So, for instance, if you talk about those in rural areas, high consumption of alcohol, which is a risk factor, those who are also smoking, and then of late, the different aphrodisiacs with herbal medications, and people use it without any prescription and things like that, different concoctions. That's important. And again, look at the issue of galamsey. Galamsey is mostly in rural areas and not in cities. I'm not too sure whether I found any cities with galamsey. And I remember, I think somewhere last year, I was talking to a medical doctor in the Western region and was talking to me about what she described as an epidemic of kidney disease. And basically, if you look at it, the only thing you can think about is galamsey.
Hmm.
Again, you're also thinking about the issue of chemicals used in agriculture without the necessary supervision and regulation. So these days, instead of people weeding, they're using herbicides. I'm not saying that herbicides is a problem, but I think the issue is about unregulated use of herbicides, and even those doing vegetables. Look at the amount of fertilizers they are pumping into vegetables, the amount of chemicals they are pumping into vegetables to control pests and insects. And all these are major risk factors that are also related to NCDs. And so I think that for those in rural areas, the major issue is about how do we handle and treat them when they are diagnosed. And I remember earlier on Dr. Insian was talking about the fact that we do not have the requisite personnel and equipment at the lower level, which is very true. But I think it's at this point that we can innovate. And basically, one of the things that I'm learning from my new found love, let me explain, because maybe my wife might be watching so that she doesn't think something else. My new found love is my new research. Basically, within health policy, we've been talking about prioritization over a long period of time. But I've been raising theoretical questions about to what extent can you prioritize? At a certain point, there is nothing you can do. And so what is the next level? And the way I'm answering that question is through technology. Hmm. And I think we can use technology to do a lot of things. There is this example of Debbie Shetty from India, who is tackling the issue of cardiac issues from India. And Shetty is actually educating MOs, medical officers, house officers in rural areas to be able to diagnose, basic cardiac issues, and also connecting rural facilities with his teaching hospital, and specialists at the teaching hospital work with those in the rural areas based on medical technology or transmission technology to help them to be able to diagnose and give basic treatment. And in fact, those that they cannot treat, they will be the ones to refer so that things don't get out of hand even before they come to them. And so we can use technology to address this. But let me also say, Kojo, I remember you were asking Labran about the issue of, so we did this for tobacco.
Hmm.
Why are we not doing it for?
I was actually asking Dr. Nsia Boati.
Yes, yeah. Why are we not doing it for?
Sugar.
Sugar. We need to understand that this is politics, okay? Because these corporations are big corporations that control a lot of resources. So there is a political economy around those issues. And so if we think that the state will just act, it may not happen. There is the need to exercise a certain level of agency. And I think that what we saw in Kenya, at least, has taught us a bit of lessons that there is a certain level of agency. When I say agency, it's not UR, I mean AG.
Agency.
Yes, agency, okay, about with the people. And so it means that we all need to be part of this conversation and let our politicians, those who make decisions in parliament, understand that we are at the crossroads, and we cannot begin to look at NCDs as business as usual. And until those sort of things happen, it is unlikely that the policy shift that we require will happen. Because remember that these corporations are big, their tentacles are huge, and they are very influential.
Important point. I want to come to you, Dr. Thompson, while we're talking about exercise, right? This text message came through from one of our viewers. She works from home, okay? So she first tells us what she ate today. Okay. She's had Tom Brown, she's had Banku and Okru stew, She's had palm nut soup and a bread roll for dinner. Okay. Now, for exercise, she says, and I quote, for exercise, I've gone downstairs more than 20 times today. But I hear that cannot be regarded as exercise because this is something I do every day, so the body is used to it, and I don't do it vigorously either. Talk to us about the reality of exercise and people's opportunities to exercise. In the consulting room, do you find that this sedentary lifestyle, I mean, is something that the average Ghanaian can actually turn around? Do they have opportunities to do so?
Yes, thank you very much. So with the text, concerning the text message that you have, and then she talking about the fact that she's gone up and down the stairs 20 times today, it's got to do with how long did it take her to do that up and down for 20 times. And if it's something that she does every day, of course the body is used to it. So we call that, that will be regarded as physical activity, okay? So she has not been sedentary the whole day, because what is required is that you do, when you're doing exercise, you will do 30 minutes of medium intensity to vigorous intensity of exercise. And the difference between physical activity and exercise is the fact that exercise is more intentional so that you gain from it. Okay, so yes, you can engage in physical activity, but it may not necessarily be exercise. So she can be considered as not being sedentary, so long as, I mean, she's going up and down the stairs. When we say sedentary, then it means that for most of the part of the day, you are seated or you are lying down and you don't engage much. Of course, we do some physical activity. I could walk to the door. That's considered as physical activity because I'm not sitting down. But for how long do you engage in physical activity to consider it as exercise? How vigorous is the activity that you are doing so that it will be considered as exercise? And when you engage in that, that is when you gain the benefit from it. So we say that you are doing physical activity so that it becomes exercise and then you benefit from it. And of course, yes, from the consulting room, I usually would get patients, when they come, you ask them about their physical activity. And of course, we are living in an urban area where currently most people live far away from where they work. So they have to wake up early in the morning. I'm a typical example. I wake up very early in the morning and then I have to go to work. When I get to work, go up, go and sit down, wait a few, couple of hours, then I have to start my work. So, I mean, that's the same for most people. You sit in the car, drive for an hour, go and sit down in your office or consulting room. And if you have a lot of work to do, whether it's paperwork or seeing patients, you probably won't get up from your desk to go and do a physical, to engage in physical activity. So then you tend to be sedentary. So in order for you to break this sedentary pattern, what you can do is, if I have to go to the door to go and open the door and call the next patient to come in, that's using myself as an example, that's engaging in physical activity instead of probably pressing a bell for the next person to come in, or just say that I ring the patient so that when the first person comes in, then the next person, you see the patient off to the door and then open and then let the next person come in. That's physical activity. If you are too busy doing paperwork, sitting at your desk, when you're sitting at your desk, moving your legs up and down whilst you are busy doing whatever you are doing, or taking breaks or to stretch or do certain things, those are the things that you can do, and then you are engaging in some physical activity. It may not necessarily be exercise, okay? And another thing about exercise is, let's say, for example, this morning I woke up and then went for a walk. I went for a 30, 35 minute brisk walk and then went back. But if I go back to work and then I sit at my desk for the whole day without even getting up for at least 15 minutes every hour, it's considered as me being sedentary. Okay, so that is the problem. So most people who are working, who have, let's say, white collar jobs, they are not really engaging in physical activity because of these things that I have mentioned a little earlier. So it's taking the opportunity, having the knowledge that even though you may not be exercising, you should be able to engage in some physical activity throughout the daytime. Even if you can't do exercise during the daytime, when you go back home, you may have the chance of doing some exercise. So if it's required that you get about 150 minutes to 300 minutes of exercise every week, supposing you're doing a little less than that, it's something that we mentioned earlier on that, okay, you are doing this, how can you improve on that? So that even when you are sitting down and you are doing a few movements, that should count. So I think that we need to make a deliberate effort, and it all comes down to, as I was talking about earlier, that it boils down to the individual. Let's start as individuals, let's start as families, let's take it on to the community and to our workplaces, that it is possible for us to engage in physical activity and even sometimes have exercise. There are other places where probably on Fridays there's a workplace exercise group. Okay, so on Fridays everybody brings their exercise gear, they exercise for an hour, and then whether you shower, if there's a shower there, or you go home and then you go and then freshen up. So it's something that it's an innovation that we can introduce at our workplaces. And also in the schools, I'm not sure how long they have physical activity for, PE. Okay, so maybe it's 30 minutes of exercise that they are having. But let's allow the children to run around. When they come home to these days, the children want to sit down and then look at the screen. The screen time is causing a lot of problems for us. So people have bought toys for their children to play with. They have a ball, they have a skipping rope, they have their bicycles. Let them ride their bicycles. Sometimes you say the children need a bit of supervision because you're not sure of how the neighborhood is like and things like that. Sometimes, yes, you may not be able to, but okay, if they can ride their bicycle just in the front of the street, you have just have to take, if it's just maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes of your time, I think it's worth it. You know, if you have to go and stand there because they are younger children and then you're afraid that maybe a vehicle may come, and then let's just put in that time. And even as you are watching them, you are also moving around, and that's the time that you take the opportunity to also engage in some physical activity. So when we start this little by little, and then also we make sure that our policy makers put this in place and then it is implemented bit by bit, we should be able to get there. And it is, you're not going to wait for tomorrow, you're not going to wait to, let's say, okay, let's start this in August or September, let's start it from this evening.
From this evening,
yeah.
Let's not waste any time. You know, every time I come to you, I'm wondering, when are we going to do this? Why aren't we doing this? When? Because it seems to me as if we're not trying to solve a new problem. It's a problem that has been solved, or at least they are working on solving it much better than we are in other parts of the world. Now, something Dr. Thompson said about children having the chance to exercise and the screen time. I have a 14-year-old son who can disappear into his screen for hours on end if I let him. Now, sometimes I want to just tell him what my father told me, which is go out and play. But when he goes out, there's nowhere to play. My entire compound is concrete, you know, for the car, for me to park a car, you know. So I'm wondering, look, is there a real way in which, I mean, you can't do everything yourselves, but you can work with other government institutions to put in little regulations. You know that you have to have a certain amount of greenery around every home.